From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now! Today, a special focus on health, the environment, and corporate responsibility. Grassroots activists from around the United States are uniting to fight dioxin and other industrial pollutants.
Dioxin is clearly the chemical that we have the most evidence for. It's the most damning. Neurological problems, immune system problems, and all of these other hormone-mediated problems, in addition to PCBs and DDTs and a whole range of other things.
When you add the class and the racial dimension to what is happening to people of color, we are assigned even a more severe status. Who has the dirtiest jobs? Answer me, people of color. Who lives closest to the incinerator? Who lives closest to the landfill? Where are they trying to put most of the nuclear waste? That's what's happening. The environment is where we live, work, and play, and in all of these areas, people of color are disproportionately impacted. The studies have shown it.
An individual can frighten a corporation, if you will, or intimidate. They take you seriously. If you take the time, you do your homework, and you pay attention to what they're doing, they have a healthy fear of what you might say about them. And what you say about them should, of course, be truthful, and I've done that. I think any activist in any community can make those same inroads.
Highlights from a powerful conference on dioxin and citizen action on this special edition of Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Bob Dole swept the Midwest primaries, at least among citizens who vote. And by the way, that percentage is appallingly low compared to most countries. Now the focus moves to California. But before we head there, we wanted to go back to one of those four Midwest states, to Michigan, where one of the most notorious industries has its corporate headquarters, Dow Chemical. Dow, of course, is most known for its production of Agent Orange, a defoliant the U.S. military sprayed over Vietnam, contaminating untold numbers of Vietnamese people and American soldiers. Less well known is the corporate giant's continued practices, beginning at its home in Midland, Michigan. This past weekend, I went to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, to cover an environmental conference. Its official title, Time for Action, the Third Citizens Conference on Dioxin. More than 500 activists gathered to organize a growing national movement against dioxin and other endocrine-disrupting chemicals. Dioxin is a byproduct of incineration, as well as any industrial process using chlorine, from paper mills to plastics plants. Mounting evidence suggests these toxins act like natural hormones, like estrogen, for example, in the body, endangering fertility and overall health. On Thursdays on Democracy Now!, we bring you a segment called Living Democracy, stories of grassroots efforts to improve the environment, public education, create jobs, and hold public officials accountable. Today, we devote the whole show to Living Democracy, beginning with two environmentalists who attended the Dioxin Conference from Michigan, where they've been waging a battle against Dow Chemical. Tracy Easthope is with the Ecology Center in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and Diane Hebert is with Citizens for Alternatives to Chemical Contamination in Midland. I asked Diane how it feels to live in the belly of the beast.
It smells bad, for starters. Very repressive. I would say rather difficult to lead a normal life in a corporate town if you're not in agreement with their policies and their smells and everything else that they do. You don't fit in.
What does Dow do in Midland?
They do a little of everything. They produce quite a few chemicals, but my major concern and reason that I got involved is because they incinerate a lot of their waste, and as a result, we have very high levels of dioxin in the community. And we also have had health effects that have shown up that they're suggestive of dioxin exposure, like soft tissue sarcoma. We've had some birth defects that have shown up that are very suspect or suggestive of chemical contamination.
And you say that it's very repressive to live there. In what way does Dow control the town?
Well, they are the major industry. It's a fairly small community, and of course they give freely to civic organizations. We have it's a very well-funded town educationally. We have a center for the arts, a very nice library, things that a town that size would not normally have without a large industry. Mm-hmm. And so it you can become unpopular in a hurry if you suggest that this industry is less than perfect. Mm-hmm. But I will say that in the past few years, the attitude has started to change and maybe even a drastic change in the last 3 years since the downsizing. There was a time when you couldn't find anyone to speak against Dow. They'd say, if you said it smelled bad, they'd say, well, yes, that's the smell of money. Now, since the downsizing, there's less loyalty. More people will say, well, yes, I don't doubt that the health effects are caused by these chemicals. And so the trust in Dow seems to be gone. And so there are some changes that I'm seeing recently.
Tracy Easthope, you live 2 hours away from Midland in Ann Arbor, yet you've also taken on Dow. Why is that?
Because this company is responsible for contaminating the Great Lakes Basin and really the world. And they're one of the leading chlorine producers. Chlorine is essential to the formation of dioxin. I believe that my family has been contaminated. I believe the whole Great Lakes Basin has been contaminated in the world.
How has your family been contaminated?
I believe through eating fish. We're Catholic. We ate a lot of fish.
So you sued Dow.
The Ecology Center sued Dow over a particular issue, and that was they wanted to burn more dioxin in Midland. And we thought enough was enough. So we sued them over their proposal to burn dioxin-contaminated waste that they had been storing on site for 20 years.
And what happened with the suit?
Well, we put together kind of a scrappy legal team, and we lost. We sued using a number of different arguments, and we lost. However, Dow decided that there may be too much liability associated with burning dioxin-contaminated waste in Midland, and so sent it to another community, unfortunately.
Trucked it
to Coffeyville, Kansas.
So now Kansas has Dow's waste.
Now Kansas, I think Coffeyville was the only commercial dioxin burning incinerator in the nation, and now they will get that contamination and risk to their families and community.
Now, how does all this activism fit into, or does it, electoral politics? For example, have you gone, Diane, to your elected politicians in Midland? And is there anyone independent of Dow there?
I'm not sure I could say there's anyone independent of Dow. There is certainly many dependent of Dow. For instance, our congressman, Congressman Dave Camp, is married to a Dow attorney. My state representative, Bill Schutte, is a Dow heir. His stepfather, Carl Gerstacker, was a previous Dow chairman of the board. Pretty much down the line, there's a whole strip that I will leaflet. It's all Republican row. As far as any allies or anyone independent, I can't think of anyone. I think there are some people who listen and might be inclined to vote our way if there was enough pressure, but it takes a lot of activity.
Does this make you feel like electoral politics is not the way to go? I mean, that the only action is grassroots action for both of you? Tracy?
Clearly the people lead. I mean, it seems like we aren't going to see action unless we see a very broad and strong movement demanding that politicians do something. The interests arrayed against us are very powerful, and so we will need politicians will need the support of the people before they do anything. I think there are a number of good people in the legislature, but they're small compared to the interests arrayed against us.
The Michigan primary just took place. We haven't heard anything about Dow, and yet I assume Dow gives tremendous amount of campaign contributions when it comes to national and local politics. Do you know anything about that, Diane Hebert?
I do know that locally, there will be support for Dole. And Midland is probably 98% Republican, if I had to guess. You could hold the Democratic convention in a phone booth. And I do believe that David Camp has stated publicly that he is supporting Dole. So,
does Dow know who you are?
Dow knows me very well. I was called by the last meeting, well, the meeting before Tracy was there. One of the Dow administrators called me, the most toxic?
Persistent and toxic. He called her a persistent toxic compound, which is what, you know, dioxin and all these horrible things are. So, but we thought it was a compliment, actually.
I consider it a compliment. I really consider it a compliment. And I think it says also, because I don't have any resources, I'm not really anyone, that an individual can frighten a corporation, if you will, or intimidate. They take you seriously. If you take the time, you do your homework, and you pay attention to what they're doing, they have a healthy fear of what you might say about them. And what you say about them should, of course, be truthful. And I've done that. And they do have a healthy fear. And I think any activist in any community can make those same inroads, you know, if they're persistent.
How do you feel when you see the Dow ads on television?
They're disgusting. They're truly disgusting. I guess maybe I know too much about them and what they've really done, their history. And so I can't. It's difficult for me to watch them.
Oh, it's clearly a well-funded campaign to discredit an environmental position. And they're getting worried, I think, about the emerging evidence on hormone disruptors and dioxin. And so they've funded this enormous campaign to convince people, for instance, that plastics are central to a happy and healthy life, which I hope people recognize is really a big lie. They're funding tremendous campaigns to discredit, to defund, to basically confuse people about the state of the science concerning these chemicals. And research scientists have recently said in our area they're concerned about the corporate control of the research agenda. So they are certainly funding an effort to confuse people and to keep us, you know, ignorant.
You're from Ann Arbor, Tracy Eastoke, which is the town of the University of Michigan at Ann Arbor. What kind of money has Dow contributed to the university? Do you know?
I don't know the dollar amount. I do know that the new chemistry building is the Dow Chemistry Building. I do know that the global stewardship chair of Dow is the head of the Alumni Association in my School of Public Health. They're everywhere. They regularly give presentations to students. I know that they do fund research at the University of Michigan as well as capital improvements. So, and not only Dow, but a number of different companies are funding research. And I think people really need to question how much research is being funded by major corporations. It's clearly we're losing publicly funded research in this country. And I don't think people understand the implications of that, that we will have science driven for profit instead of science driven for the people. And it's clearly already happening. I don't know the statistics, but I know that they fund quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that either of you would like to add?
Diane? I think it's interesting. We had some discussions today about media and what we'd like to get out to the media. It is so seldom that the real information of what's going on gets out. For instance, one of the recent meetings with Dow, we were discussing the endocrine disruptors. Well, Dow is, in fact, studying, I believe they stated, 9 chemicals that they are concerned may be hormone disruptors. They're not publicly discussing that. The general public doesn't know. Well, for them to study 9 of these chemicals, that means they're taking it very seriously. But if you listen to their public presentation, you wouldn't know that. And I don't think the general public knows that this is a very serious issue, very serious health issue, probably one of the most serious to come along in many years.
Vietnam veterans groups, are they strong in Michigan?
The veterans have actually been really strong in Michigan. There is a Michigan dioxin group, veteran group, and the veterans have actually been active in against spraying of 2,4-D, which is contaminated with dioxin, which is sprayed widely on Michigan lakes all over.
Made by Dow?
Yes, made by Dow in Midland, I believe. And once a lake is sprayed with 2,4-D, it has permanent restrictions on its use. People don't often know this. This is so that the company is relieved of any liability if there are problems, if their lake is sprayed. So if you live in Michigan, you live near a lake, you ought to check out and see if your lake is getting sprayed, because likely it is.
What are the reason giving for the spraying of the lake?
They do this for weed control, which could be done mechanically. And some communities have chosen not to use 2,4-D. I think people are becoming further educated.
Is there a number that people can contact if they're interested in reaching your organization? For example, Tracy Easthope over at the Ecology Center in Ann Arbor.
Sure. People can call 313-761-3186. And we're happy to answer people's questions or help them get involved or give them information, whatever they might need.
In fact, something we didn't discuss is your work around women and breast cancer.
Yeah, we just held a major conference and public hearing. Bella Abzug came in. Leading researchers on this issue came in to talk about the link between environmental contamination and breast cancer, as well as rising rates of children's diseases and developmental disorders and problems with reproductive system, including declines in sperm count and increases in testicular cancer and prostate cancer.
Did the press give this much coverage?
Some coverage, not as much as we would have liked, especially given the caliber of the scientists that we had. We decided to bring the science to the people and give people information about what's going on in their communities, in their own bodies. And people really responded very positively, because it's clear that there's something going wrong. Too many women are getting breast cancer. Too many young women are getting breast cancer. Too many women have endometriosis. Too many people tell me that they know young people or young men who are getting testicular cancer. Birth defects. Michigan has a very high rate of chronic diseases as well. So clearly there's a problem. And people recognize there's a problem. They suspect that contamination may be the source.
And just for listeners who aren't familiar, as you are, having just come from a conference on dioxin, on what is the relation between breast cancer, endometriosis, testicular cancer, what do they all have in common?
They're all hormone-mediated diseases, it's believed. That is, the hormone system has something to do with how they're acting. And they all are suspected to be related to environmental contamination, in particular related to contaminants that act or mess up the natural hormone system. So they have in common this hormonally mediated. Dioxin is clearly the chemical that we have the most evidence for. It's the most damning. Neurological problems, immune system problems, and all of these other hormone mediated problems, in addition to PCBs and DDTs and a whole range of other things. And these compounds are still out there. Some of them are still being produced. Dioxin is clearly still is an unwanted byproduct of all sorts of industrial processes. And we are all exposed to it. We all have it in our bodies, cycling through our bodies.
Do you think you can get rid of dioxin?
Absolutely. I mean, although it will take a while, and it'll take a while to get rid of historical contamination. Dioxin has an enormous half-life in the environment and a half-life in our bodies of at least 7 years. So our bodies are a little toxic waste dump and continue to expose us to toxins as they resuspend in our bodies. So once we get rid of the sources, it'll still take a long time, like we banned DDT and we banned PCBs, but those are still very big problems threatening people's health. So once we get rid of the sources of dioxin, we'll still have problems. But I believe that this issue is of critical importance to our health, the community's health, the public's health, and we will be forced to respond to it.
Tracy Easthope is with the Ecology Center in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Diana Baer is with Citizens for Alternatives to Chemical Contamination in Midland. You're listening to a Living Democracy special on Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Coming up, Vietnam veterans exposed to Agent Orange talk about their lives and their despair. But first, some speeches from the Third Citizens Conference on Dioxin after this. You're listening to Democracy Now!, Pacifica Radio's daily national grassroots election show. Tuesday is the California primary. Monday on this show, we'll be speaking to California environmentalists from Silicon Valley to the low-income African-American community of Richmond to the breast cancer capital of San Francisco. But for the moment, we'll return to the South, to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, where over 500 environmental justice activists spent last weekend strategizing over how to take on some of the country's most powerful corporations to stop the production of dioxin, an unwanted byproduct of incineration and many industrial processes, so many of which are located in low-income communities of color. Damu Smith is National Associate Director of Greenpeace in Atlanta.
Good morning, sisters and brothers. Welcome to the South. How many people here from the South? Raise your hand. The South is in the house. This is the poorest region of the country. This is the bastion of racism in America, home of the civil rights movement, place where Native people resisted conquest and relocation, place where farm workers from Texas to Louisiana to Florida labor in the fields with dioxin-laden pesticides. This is the region where workers work under the most inhumane, unregulated, unorganized conditions. You are in the state of Louisiana where the white electorate in this state almost elected a member of the Ku Klux Klan to governorship of this state. You are in the middle of Cancer Alley, where we have the highest rates of cancer in the nation and perhaps in the world, where 134 petrochemical companies line the Mississippi River, where these petrochemical companies have literally destroyed historically African communities founded by former slaves, where black people have had to be relocated to other parts outside of the context of their traditional places because of racism. You are in the home where slavery once flourished. You are in the home where sharecropping once flourished. You are in the place in this nation where racist, violent, and white vigilante terror once ran rampant throughout this region, and the legacy of that persists today in the South and all over the United States. You are in this part of the country where the environmental justice movement has a glorious history, where in 1982 the people of Warren County, North Carolina, in that African-American community rose up trying to stop the PCBs being dumped in their community. And Dolly Burwell is back there. Give her a hand. She helped to lead that movement. You are in the South, where we have Sumter County, where we have the world's largest landfill, once again, in a predominantly African-American county. But I hear Malcolm X's voice talking to me now. He says, stop talking about the South. Anytime you south of the Canadian border, you're South. So racism all over the country, this is where we are. Racism. The concept of white supremacy and non-white inferiority is the ideology that has governed this nation from the beginning. Within the context of environmental racism, it means that we have an unequal distribution of wealth, rights, and privileges between white and non-white people. It means that, therefore, we have an unequal distribution of the poison resulting in people of color sharing a disproportionate burden of the risk and the effects and the consequences and the suffering and the sickness and the death. It also means within the context of injustice that poor white people too suffer because of classism in this country. But when you add the class and the racial dimension to what is happening to people of color, we are assigned even a more severe status. Who has the dirtiest jobs? Answer me, people of color. Who lives closest to the incinerators? Who lives closest to the landfills? Where are they trying to put most of the nuclear waste? That's what's happening. The environment is where we live, work, and play, and in all of these areas, people of color are disproportionately impacted. The studies have shown it. A movement has grown. An environmental justice movement that confronts environmental racism frontally. It is an inclusive movement. The people of color-led environmental justice movement is multiracial, multicultural, multi-ethnic, multilinguistic. We have made it a cornerstone of what we are trying to do. We're not going to have a meeting, even if it's people of color-led. It's always going to be based on that principle. White people in the environmental movement must learn a lesson from that movement so that we don't have people of color leadership and people of color organizers disrespected as part of the organizing process and as part of the leadership. What it means, we have principles of environmental justice, and by the way, in case anybody is mistaken, the principles of environmental justice were adopted in October of 1991 at the People of Color Environmental Leadership Summit. And the principles that you see in the booklet were reprinted from the proceedings published by the Commission of Racial, for Racial Justice of the United Church of Christ from that meeting. That's right. Just so we're clear on the origin of that document. And I want to conclude by saying that we must lift up the statistics around dioxin that speak to this fact. The data suggests that African Americans have a 33% more dioxin in their bodies than whites. The 177 chlorinated synthetic chemicals found in our bodies, in terms of the statistics around that, women have 15% more, African American women have 30% more. If you are people of color, you are involved in subsistence fishing and hunting, you have the possibility, because of the fact that the animals have digested dioxin, of getting more dioxin in your bodies. The poison is not being distributed equally. Nobody should be poisoned. So what this means is this. When we are organizing this movement, we cannot be blind, deaf, and dumb on the question of racism and environmental injustice. We have to raise this as part of our strategy and everything we do, this must be at the center of our thinking alongside everything else that we're doing. Thank you very much, brothers and sisters.
Damu Smith is National Associate Director of Greenpeace in Atlanta. He was also one of the organizers of last year's first People of Color Environmental Leadership Summit. In the background, you hear Margie Williams of the Deep South Center for Environmental Justice in New Orleans.
You got to move.
In the last week, a new book was released called Our Stolen Future. One of its authors, Dr. Theo Colburn of the World Wildlife Fund, joined us on Democracy Now! Last Friday. While many environmentalists at the Dioxin Conference applauded its focus on dioxin and endocrine disruptors, participants like Peter Montague, editor of Rachel's Environment and Health Weekly, the leading fact sheet of the dioxin movement, felt it didn't go far enough.
Our conference began with a speaker named Pete Myers, who's the co-author of this book. I urge you to get this book and read this book. If you don't know the facts behind this story, you need to know the facts behind this story. The book is called Our Stolen Future. Our Stolen Future. And on the cover it asks, are we threatening our fertility, our intelligence, and our survival? A scientific detective story. One thing that's not in this book is the answer to the question, who stole our future? Who stole our future? And of course, the answer is corporations stole our future. Let me get organized here so I can make a coherent presentation about the nature of this creature, the corporation. It is a legal entity. It was created by us. It was created by our parents and our grandparents, thinking they were doing a good thing. The corporation is formed by a state legislature, which issues a piece of paper called a corporate charter. And if a group of people get a corporate charter, they are then incorporated. And this corporation then takes on a life of its own. It is formed for one purpose, to make a profit for investors. It is formed for only one purpose, to make a profit for investors. If it does something else, it can be sued by those investors for breach of fiduciary trust, for failure to focus on making a profit. And so the people who are inside corporations are not free to act upon their consciences. They are not free to do what is right and what is good and what they as human beings know is right and good. They must do whatever will make a profit. And so when they get into the corporate organization, they lose their humanity. They lose their conscience. They lose their sense of right and wrong. They lose their capacity to be guided by their sense of right and wrong. They lose their humanity. And in some sense, we need to liberate them from those organizations. Another characteristic of this legal entity, the corporation, is that there is limited liability. You all know from your own experience growing up that liability, pain, is a very important, you get very important lessons from life by the pain that you cause to yourself by making mistakes. If you can't feel pain, you can't be guided toward a proper way to behave. You become some kind of a sociopathic criminal person if you can't feel pain. If you were free to just be aggressive and punch people whenever you wanted your way, if they didn't punch you back and you say, oh, I better not do that, that hurt, you'd go nuts. You'd be a crazy person. So being able to get feedback in the form of pain, or the legal term liability, is very, very important. If you can't feel liability, you can't learn how to behave in a civilized fashion. And that's the nature of corporations. They are not able to behave in a civilized fashion. That's because they have limited liability. We need to take that away. We have the power. We are the ones who created these entities. We have power over them. That's the nature of our democracy. We just need to focus on taking that power back and asserting that power. Another characteristic of corporations is that they must grow. They need more market share. They need to be more powerful in their community. That helps them become stable. That helps them survive. And so they're constantly trying to grow. In order to grow, they must externalize their costs. They must dump their costs onto their community. If they're faced with a choice of dumping 100 pounds of crud into the environment free or paying $500 to process that 100 pounds of crud, which do you think they're going to choose? They're going to dump it into the environment. That's called externalizing your costs, because every dollar they save is a dollar that they've earned without doing anything. So they dump their costs onto us. A worker gets sick. They're facing a choice. They can either nurture that worker, help that worker get well, provide benefits and health care for that worker, or they can fire that worker and tell the worker to go to the emergency room and let the public hospital pick up the tab. Which are they going to do? Of course, they're going to fire that worker and let the public pick up the costs of that worker's illness. They are not going to expend their money on it. That's externalizing their costs. It's in the nature of corporations that they do this. They are also protected by the Bill of Rights. They were not given this by the Constitution of the United States. They were given this by a judge in 1886. This was a judicial decision by a judge who was not even elected to that office, by an appointed official. And since then, we have failed to take that back from them, to take that away from them. So they, when they put money into a legislative campaign, that is protected as free speech. Bogus, completely bogus. The rule of thumb should be, if it doesn't breathe, it isn't protected by the Bill of Rights. We have the power to take these things back. And the time is right to begin. Business Week has March 11th, Business Week, has a really remarkable poll by the Harris Polling Organization, a mainstream surveying organization. They asked the American people two questions. One, U.S. corporations should have only one purpose, to make the most profit for their shareholders, and their pursuit of that goal will be the best for America in the long term. What percent of the American people believe that? 5%. 5% think that corporations should have... The alternative was U.S. corporations should have more than one purpose. They also owe something to their workers and their communities in which they operate. And they should sometimes sacrifice some profit for the sake of making things better for their workers and communities. 95% of the American people went for that. So the time is right for a political movement like ours to not only focus on protecting our future and our health, and I don't want to divert us from that basic goal of protecting our future and our health. That is why we are in this room. We are together to protect our future, our children, our health, our communities. We must not divert ourselves from that. But we got to recognize that if we're really going to get past fighting brush fires, we need to control this corporate entity that we created and which is now out of control. If we are going to take control of our local economies And that's what Elaine Gross of Sustainable America is about. And I urge you to pay attention to Sustainable America. That's the other side of protecting your environment, is to protect your local economy and take control of your local economy. And that, both of those things, protecting the environment and protecting your local economy and taking control, means taking control away from corporations. Think of the good fight that you'll get into if you try to, if you start a campaign as part of your local struggle to control the economy and protect your environment and your family. Start a campaign that says, as a matter of law, no corporation or other entity which produces or emits dioxin will be permitted to do business in your community. Take it to the next step. Let's demand control directly by the people over corporate behavior. They should not be allowed to do business in your community if they are dumping this super toxic poison that is stealing our future. They must not be permitted to do this. We have the power. It's time we asserted that power, and that will be just the first step. Let's get into a good fight over democracy versus corporate power.
Peter Montague, editor of Rachel's Environment and Health Weekly, based in Annapolis, Maryland. His email address, erf@rachel.clark.net. That's erf@rachel.clark.net. If you'd like to get a copy of today's Living Democracy special, you can call the Pacifica Archives at 1-800-735-0230. That's 1-800-735-0230. Vietnam Veterans and Dioxin, up next, after this break. Listening to Democracy Now!, I'm Amy Goodman. Earlier in the show, you heard from two women who've taken on Dow Chemical and Dow's home state of Michigan. We now turn to the most well-known group of dioxin victims, Vietnam veterans. They've taken on the corporate giant as well as their government that bought tons of Dow's Agent Orange, spraying it all over Vietnam, its people, plants, and animals, as well as thousands of American soldiers. Two of those soldiers join us now. Hank Erb is a Vietnam veteran, as is George Claxton, National Chair of the Agent Orange Dioxin Committee of Vietnam Veterans of America. Last week, a major study was released linking Agent Orange exposed soldiers to spina bifida in their children. George Claxton, what's the significance of this study?
It was out of the National Academy of Sciences, which is not a governmental agency. It actually was a review of scientific literature, not a study. The review did find suggestive evidence of an association between birth defects in the children of Vietnam veterans exposed to Agent Orange. Now, the significance of this goes far beyond any scientific study on Agent Orange that has ever been produced, and there's a reason for it. The chemical industry and paper industry have said for years that you can never prove that dioxin or Agent Orange causes birth defects in veterans' children simply because of the fact that the female wasn't exposed. Well, this study proves, to a certain degree, that they're wrong. Because, number one, the birth defects that they're talking about here are paternally mediated birth defects. 99.9 times out of 100, it was the male Vietnam veteran that was exposed in Vietnam. That veteran came back and impregnated his wife or girlfriend, and the result was a child with spina bifida. That being the case, then one would have to say that for the first time, the government is admitting, or an agency hired by the government, is admitting that in fact, children with spina bifida can be associated with father's exposure to Agent Orange. That in itself is more significant than any study on dioxin ever produced. And I'm sure that industry, particularly the chemical industry, will do everything they can to try and negate the results of that. But the animal studies are conclusive on it, and the suggestive evidence, I'd say, is quite strong. So it's really a door that's been opened, a very large door.
Were you exposed to Agent Orange?
Well, yes, I was. My first year. My second year in Vietnam, I may not have been exposed. It's possible. My first year, I was clearly exposed.
Have you felt any adverse health effects from that?
Oh, yeah. Well, they thought I had colon cancer. It almost was, in fact, colon cancer. It ended up as a colitis. And, of course, I've had a number of neurological problems, including some memory problems.
And has the Veterans Administration dealt with you fairly on it, would you say?
Oh, no. You've got to be careful when you talk about the VA. The VA can only compensate for illnesses if the high structure of the VA decides to make rules for compensation on Agent Orange-related diseases. And they've only made rules for 10 diseases so far, and colitis is not... neurological problems are, in fact, one now. They will be. The National Academy of Sciences did admit that a certain sort of transient peripheral neuropathy is associated with Agent Orange exposure, so it's possible they may compensate for that now. We'll have to wait and see.
And George Claxton is National Chair of the Agent Orange Dioxin Committee of Vietnam Veterans of America. As I said, we're also joined by Hank Erb. Hank, you too were exposed to Agent Orange in Vietnam.
Yes.
Where do you live now?
In Colorado.
Has the U.S. government acknowledged that you are an Agent Orange victim?
Not at all, no. It goes back, some of the documentation on this goes back on me 15 and 20 years, and it's been a constant denial by the DA, our VA. There was a study by the Texas Department of Health and the University of Texas in the early 80s, which determined from my immune system damage and some of the other damage they found, and the spraying records, the herbs tapes by the Army, the record of their spraying, that I was one of the 13 worst exposed veterans in the state of Texas.
What has that meant? What kind of compensation have you received?
Absolutely none. The entire time I've had to pay my own doctor bills, and the VA has not recognized that because it's not on their list that their rules recognize.
So when you hear politicians, when you hear, for example, the presidential candidates going around the country talking about how proud they are of soldiers, what do you think?
I think they're proud to send them, but they're not too proud when we come back to take care of them.
So what do you say to these candidates, Republican or Democrat?
Well, it's obvious that something has to be done. There has to be a reasonable doubt or something that will help people, because this has been going on not only with the Agent Orange vets, but the atomic veterans. My father died from radiation exposure in Nagasaki, and there was no recognition of that. We have the Gulf War syndrome veterans. Nothing is apparently moving on that. So it seems to be a pattern of denial and no help.
George Claxton, has the Vietnam Veterans of America made any demands of, well, for example, how has President Clinton responded to the whole Agent Orange situation?
Well, I'm not sure how President Clinton has responded. My bylaws and charter refrain me from commenting about politicians, but I think the administration is taken, on the whole, has taken a worthwhile view towards it. But the problem isn't politicians. The problem is misinformation. The chemical industry and paper industry in particular are good at giving the government and giving politicians misinformation. For instance, when the Agent Orange payment program closed down last year, the next thing that happened was politicians were being told that the Agent Orange issue was over. Well, all you have to do is look at the National Academy of Sciences review a couple days ago, and you know it's not over at all. It's just begun. But this is the type of misinformation that Congress receives. And when Congress receives it, we literally have to let the world know that that type of information is wrong, that the real information on dioxin and Agent Orange is that we have to move forward on it.
Have any politicians championed your cause? Any Congress members, yeah. Senators?
Yes, there were some.
Who?
In fact, a lot of them had, once they had the facts in front of them. I'm not going to, you know, obviously there's been some. I know Senator Daschle was one of them, a lot more. But as I say, it depends whether they see it as a priority, whether they have the information in front of them. If they don't, you can't expect them to do anything.
Even when they do have the information in front of them, when they're dealing with such powerful corporations as Dow, and we know how money works in the political system and who gets their issues voted on in the way they want, would you really say it's an issue of misinformation?
I think misinformation has a big part in it. As for political influence, well, I mean, the industry has lobbyists. There's no question about that. I'm not going to get caught in the situation of saying that politicians are influenced in a wrong way to vote against something. I think it has a lot more to do with misinformation. But it's clear there are the big industry has lobbyists out there, and they have a lot of money. There's no question about it. They, if for no other reason, have the ability to produce misinformation in a vast amount. I think that really is a lot more to it. I don't think it's just that politicians are. I don't think politicians are told that, hey, we know this is wrong, but do it anyways. Now, I don't think that's it. I think it has a lot to do with misinformation, a lot to do with it.
Hank Erb, how do you feel when you see a Dow commercial on TV? They're usually those kind of feel-good commercials about a father and son or about how Dow has improved life in America today.
They upset me quite a bit. I was involved with the veterans lawsuit with the chemical companies, so I know what the outcome of that was. It was a $180 million settlement, and I think the public thinks that, well, we're all rich now. But in fact, I was part of the largest settlement group in that lawsuit, and what that amounted to was a little over $800 a year for 5 or 6 years, and that was it.
$800 a year for 5 or 6 years?
That's right. And I see this pattern in other people, too, like the breast implant people who recently had Dow Chemical funding studies that were released before the court decision on them, and then a branch of Dow Chemical, Dow Corning, going bankrupt in order to not pay the people. So this has gone on for decades, and they still seem to be able to get away with this manipulation, as far as I'm concerned.
Do you expect things to change? Do you think do you think Republican or Democratic administrations make a difference in this issue?
Not really. It seems to stay the same no matter what the administration's party is. Hopefully, there will be a change. Hopefully, this is a new day for this issue. The things are beginning to change. Maybe people are becoming more aware of the real dangers of dioxin in their environment, not just veterans, but everybody. And hopefully, things will change and something will happen.
Speaking of dioxin, I mean, George Claxton, your committee is called the Agent Orange Dioxin Committee, and you're dealing with the issue of dioxin. When you're exposed to dioxin, a Vietnam vet that's already been exposed to Agent Orange, are you more vulnerable?
Yes, it's led to probably a dozen different things happening with me. The immune system damage has led to autoimmune diseases like rheumatoid arthritis, and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, which is a lymphatic cancer. I have infections, external, internal, conditions arising from the mix of these conditions.
This is all from the Agent Orange exposure?
Yes, it's basically all that can be traced to the immune system damage, and the EPA basically says the immune system damage is caused by dioxin. So we have one government agency saying it is. We have other government agencies saying it isn't. They can't seem to get together on this.
What does Dow admit at this point?
Nothing that I can tell. I have seen some chemical foundations or organizations that are funded by the chemical companies who are making some very outrageous statements. One I recently saw said that the only effects of dioxin was a transitory rash. You know, in this day and age, with all the study that's been done, with even the EPA and other organizations acknowledging these studies, that's an incredible statement.
This, your committee, the Agent Orange Dioxin Committee of Vietnam Veterans of America, does this mean that you're going beyond Agent Orange now, calling it Dioxin Agent Orange, or do you call it Dioxin Agent Orange because it's the dioxin that has hurt you?
You have to understand a couple of things. I think the chemical companies knew right from the start, they certainly knew in the 50s, that 2,4-5-T had a byproduct, and it was chlorinated. It was very, very toxic. And of course, it was dioxin. Dioxin has always been the issue. Keep in mind that also that you're talking about more than one dioxin, but you're usually talking about the 2,3-7-8 isomer, which is by far the most toxic. There are, in fact, 74 other dioxins and 134 difurans, just to start off with. So the magnitude of the problem goes far, far beyond what most people realize. Sure, we're dealing with more than just Agent Orange. We need support. We need to get at the truth of what dioxin has done. And we're not going to be able to get at the truth alone. And we can't win compensation and win the truth simply by staying alone. We have an obligation to others. We have an obligation to other soldiers. We have an obligation to humanity to get at the truth of this situation. And that goes far beyond the Agent Orange issue. No question about that. I'm not afraid to admit it.
So what are you calling for now?
Well, of course, number one, we're calling for research in certain areas where there hasn't been research, including research in Vietnam. We're calling for compensation on at least 25 different illnesses, including birth defects. And, of course, we're calling on the truth and getting at the complete truth and what dioxin does, particularly with its hormonal effects. Goes very, very far. It includes many illnesses and includes reproductive problems. And I think the studies in Japan and Taiwan show that, too, where people were exposed to PCBs. And they even show it in Michigan a little bit from the farmers that were exposed to polybrominated biphenyls, too, although Michigan doesn't want to admit that.
Do you think dioxin should be eradicated, an end to incineration, an end to chlorine-based chemicals?
Well, incineration is your biggest producer of dioxin, particularly medical incinerators. There has to be a better method for disposing of chlorine waste particularly dioxins and difurans. And there are better ways. There's no perfect way. The perfect way is to not produce it in the first place. And until industry is convinced that there are better, more practical, and even more economic methods, they're going to do it. And we're the only ones that are going to stop them.
George Claxton is chair of the Agent Orange Dioxin Committee of Vietnam Veterans of America. Hank Erb is also a Vietnam vet. Both were poisoned by Agent Orange during the war. For more information on dioxin and other toxins, you can call the Citizens Clearinghouse for Hazardous Waste at 703-237-2249. Democracy Now! Is produced by Julie Drizin, engineered by Ken Mason. Thanks to Peter Boshin and Errol Maitland for getting us the music on the show. It's called Agent Orange by Depeche Mode. We'd like to welcome KVMR in Nevada City. For a taped copy of the show, call 1-800-735-0230. I'm Amy Goodman for Democracy Now!